Chapter 2. Boston, present day. $25,000 in hundreds, strapped to each thigh. Another $50,000 in a Velcro bag, taped to my chest. $50,000 more stuffed into the pockets of my jacket. $100,000 nestled against the small of my back. I felt like a cross between the Michelin man and a drug dealer. Bulging and nervous, I pushed through the revolving glass door and entered Logan Airport. Refrigerated air smacked me full in the face, and I paused, getting my bearings. Terminal B was bustling with college kids fleeing town for the long Memorial Day weekend. Backpacks, baggy jeans, baseball caps, duffel bags. Everyone moving in every direction at once, an unchoreographed ballet of a modern American airport. I took a deep breath and joined the flow of people. I kept my eyes low, watching my scuffed dark loafers pad across the tiled floor. Act casual. Think casual. Be casual. I tried not to think about the new BMW strapped to my back. I tried not to think about the down payment for a two-bedroom condo nestled in my jacket pockets. I concentrated on looking like everyone else. Maybe not a college kid, but perhaps a grad student, a teaching assistant, someone's older brother here to help with the luggage. Just part of the cacophony. A statistic in Logan's weekly FAA report. Act casual. Think casual. Be casual. Suddenly, the modern equivalent of Stonehenge loomed in front of me. Two airport metal detectors standing side by side, flanked by waist-high conveyor belts, continuously feeding into boxy steel X-ray machines. My pulse rocketed as I mentally checked myself. No bills hanging from my sleeves. No glimpses of green sticking out through the buttons on my shirt. I stepped into line behind a pretty brunette in low-riding jeans, even offering to help her hoist an oversized sticker-covered suitcase onto one of the conveyor belts. Act casual. Think casual. Be casual. Next, a tall African-American woman in a gray Logan uniform beckoned. There was a name tag on her right lapel, but I couldn't make out what it said because of the sweat stinging my eyes. I blinked rapidly, but casually, and stepped forward through the disembodied doorframe. The invisible rays sliced and diced my entrails in search of metal. Just as I started to breathe easier, a high-pitched mechanical scream tore through the dead air. I froze. The woman with the name tag pointed me back through the machine. Empty your pockets of any metal objects and try again. My throat constricted. My hands jerked instinctively toward the bulges beneath my jacket. Above the stacks of $100 bills, I felt something shaped like an enormous suppository. Shit, I'd forgotten about my cell phone. My fingers shook as I reached into my coat and fumbled for my Nokia. I could feel the woman's eyes on me. If she asked me to take off my jacket, I was dead. She'd see the bulges and all hell would break loose. I'd spent the past 6 months researching stories involving attempts at sneaking undeclared fortunes through airport security checkpoints, and I knew all about customs law. The security agents can detain you for 48 hours. They drag you to a windowless room, sometimes handcuff you to a chair. They call in agents from the DEA and the FBI. They confiscate your stake, sometimes without even giving you a receipt. It will take lawyers and letters and appearances in court to get the money back. Maybe 6 months, maybe a year. Meanwhile, the IRS will descend on you like gray-suited locusts. It will be up to you to prove you weren't planning to trade the cash for little bags of fine white powder. Because to customs agents, money smells like cocaine, especially $100 bills. I've read that 95% of the $100 bills in circulation have minute traces of cocaine embedded in their fibers. That means those specially trained customs dogs can sniff out a professional blackjack player faster than they can spot a drug courier. To the dogs and the customs agents, they both smell the same.